Oh, it's very early in the morning in the UK. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm coping very well.
Are you coping well? I'm glad you are.
You don't sound to be.
Well, you know, I'm trying my best here. I am, because we got up extra early this morning because we wanted to speak to Jonathan Mosen. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, it's good to be here. It's a beautiful New Zealand sunset, and for once the ground isn't shaking, so we'll make the most of that.
Well, small mercies, eh? Everyone okay in New Zealand as far as you know?
Yeah, it's been a difficult time. I was actually away in the United States when the big quake hit Wellington, where we live, and it was stressful because I had to keep advising my kids on safety issues via text message. And it's funny, you kind of think, I'm glad I'm away, but actually I didn't feel that. I just wanted to be home and give my family lots of hugs and make sure they were okay. So it's nice to be back in the shaky country again.
Yeah. I bet. Well, we wish everyone all the best after what can only be described as a terrifying experience. It's not something we experience here in the UK. I mean, I think you probably know, Jonathan, by reading the news that an earthquake in the UK is usually when a bin gets knocked over or a cat is disturbed. And that's kind of it, as far as it
you
goes.
You vote in a referendum in a way that you don't anticipate or something like that.
Yeah, that is the earthquake. But the reason we wanted to talk to you today is not about that, although it's a very worthwhile topic, of course, but we are wanting to talk to you about your latest blog, because I must say, when you write a blog, Jonathan, people notice. People stand up and actually take notice of what you've written. And your most recent one kind of strikes at the heart of something which I think Jackie's been pushing me to think about for a while, and it's certainly something I've been thinking about for a while, and that is the future of using Apple Mac computers. Not iPads or iPhones, but actually the Mac itself. And you've written a blog piece called Saying Goodbye to the Mac. Tell us what your thoughts were for writing this.
I got a Mac in 2012, and at the time I thought it would be kind of cool to be bilingual. I liked the challenge of getting a Mac and trying something new and learning a new operating system, because I find that if I take a project like that on, it keeps the old brain cells nimble. I hadn't founded Mosen Consulting then, but I figured it might be on the cards. And so I thought that getting up to speed with Mac for training and doing tutorials was a good thing too. So a whole bunch of things. And I had read a bit, and I realized that there might be some things that I would still find it more efficient to do in Windows. And so I knew that if I got a Mac, I could run Windows in a virtual machine environment. There are a number of ways that you can run a Mac with Windows on, and I cover that in the blog post. But I chose to do the virtual machine because it meant that I could have both operating systems running at the same time. It was a good process. I enjoyed it. But over time, I've become increasingly concerned about some of the compromises and sacrifices that I've had to make. And I've also found that Mac has become a little bit more quirky, a little bit more idiosyncratic over time. I definitely haven't been able to use the Mac in ways that I would really like to. Word processing, in my opinion, is way more cumbersome on the Mac if you're doing serious writing. I mean, you can write out a little report or something like that, a quick document. But if you're writing books like I do, where you have large tables of contents and many chapters and headings, there's just no comparison in the efficiency working with JAWS and Windows and VoiceOver on Mac. Various other compromises have crept in. And for me, the new MacBook that they announced recently, the MacBook Pro, was the last straw, with exclusively USB-C ports, so you're going to have dongles pointing out everywhere. The touch bar has taken away function keys on all but one model, which does make it a bit challenging for blind people who want to use Windows. So there were a whole bunch of things that made me think, you know, I enjoyed my iThings very much. It's been fun being a part of the Apple ecosystem, but my productivity is suffering too much for my particular needs. I'm not saying Mac isn't viable for everyone, but I thought it might help someone who might be making a decision about what to buy if I wrote how this decision affected me and the way that I use my computer and the software that I choose to use.
Now, interestingly, Jackie has come to, I think, what would be classed as a similar place in your life, Jackie, because you've just went out and bought yourself a lovely, shiny, new laptop, and you didn't really have Mac in mind at all, did you?
No, I have to agree with Jonathan's blog really entirely, because I have an iMac sitting at home, and I got mine in 2011 because, like Jonathan, I wanted to try it. I wanted to say that I had at least given it a go alongside Windows. I'll always be a Windows user. I like Jonathan, don't think there is anything quite like writing a long document, which I've recently done in Word with all the headings, table of contents, etc. But I think the thing for me that has really concerned me recently is my husband has a Mac Mini, which he purchased in 2009. And at that time, it was a very bulk standard configuration, but he actually, he bolted it up to 4 gig of RAM and a 500 gig hard drive. So that wasn't the standard configuration you could buy then. It doesn't sound much now, I agree. But the fact is that he couldn't upgrade to Sierra when it came out a couple of months back. And for him, that was the final straw. He said, well, if Apple are going to tell you when you can upgrade and when you can't upgrade, and, you know, okay, it works because he's still, you know, with the previous operating system. But, you know, he feels like I do now that that's just a step too far in our view. And you can have a Windows machine. I have a Windows machine here, sitting here. My older laptop is 6 years old, and I've got Windows 10, and it's running 4 gig of RAM, a 500 gig hard drive, quite happily running the same kind of configuration that Apple don't allow him to upgrade on with the Mac Mini. So I just feel now that Apple is becoming too dominant in their own sphere, and it doesn't sit comfortably with me anymore, I'm afraid.
Jonathan, do you agree with that?
You know, I think that a 7-year-old computer is a pretty good innings. You know, I think technology has changed in a long time, but I understand that if it feels like it's functioning perfectly fine and there's planned obsolescence being introduced, I understand why that would upset people. I think broadly speaking, there are two quite distinct categories. One is the way that Apple has ruffled a few feathers generally with the most recent Mac announcements. There are lots of people who feel like they've lost their core user base, which has always been professionals who do a lot of multimedia work. And I have done a lot of audio production on my Mac, and I've enjoyed that. The other issue is specifically relating to how accessible is the Mac really? And this is a blindness-specific issue. And I've found myself becoming a bit disgruntled on both counts. For me, people, I guess, familiarity breeds contempt, right? So people use their Windows machine and they run into little snafus and they think, oh man, Apple does the software, Apple does the hardware. If I could only afford to buy a Mac, all my problems would go away. And I don't know if you found this, Jackie, but really, I've just found that not to be the case. Every piece of software has bugs. And I can tell you that VoiceOver has, in my experience, at least with the software that I use, deteriorated significantly yes. over time. And the problem that I have is that, and I readily acknowledge that I might be in a bit of a privileged position, so I'll get that on the table. But if I have a problem with a screen reader or some sort of blindness product in the Windows world, it's actually pretty easy, if you're tuned in to the blindness scene remotely, to get to a person who really can influence the outcome. Yes. You know, everybody knows through podcasts or whatever who Eric Damery is, for example. Everybody knows that. And it's no great difficulty to work out what his email address is and ping him if you really are struggling, say, with a feature of JAWS. I don't really know who the anonymous people at Apple are, but they don't engage with the blind community in the same way. And I think that we're so dependent on our technology that there is an expectation that they should engage with the blind community in a really meaningful dialogue. They don't often turn up to any of the major conventions in the United States. They don't sit and discuss things with people. And you might say, well, that's just the difference between an assistive technology company and a mainstream company doing access. I don't buy that either, because I've had some really good dialogue, as have many people, with the Google folks, who are actually going out of their way to employ talented, capable blind people who are free to go on email lists and chats and engage with blind people. Apple's secrecy, their whole culture of thinking that they know better than their users is really starting to harm them in the accessibility space.
There is another side to this, Jonathan, and that is the new developments we're seeing in the iPad space. So we now see an iPad Pro that comes out next to a MacBook, and the question might be asked, and you raised it in your blog, well, where is the future of Mac going? Where is the future of iOS going if everything's moving to the middle, if it's all moving to one device? Which one should I go for? You raised that as a point, and it's a fair one, isn't it, to ask that question. What is the future of Apple?
Yes, and I don't even think Tim Cook has been clear about this, because last year when the iPad Pro came out, he came out with these statements that I thought were quite extraordinary at the time, where he said, look, the iPad is a full computer. Buy an iPad Pro, you've got a full computer. Why would you want anything else? And I thought, gee, Tim, you know, way to undercut the Mac brand there. I like my iThings very much, despite the issues that I've had as a hearing impaired person with the headphone jack. I still think that they are the most robust mobile platform around at the moment. Android's doing some good things, and so I may well change my view eventually, but that's my view for now. But I still think that Apple's got a long way to go with their screen reading in terms of really creating content. Consuming content, it's fantastic. And I do a lot of web surfing and listening to things and playing of games, and it's just awesome. But you try and really do some serious creation of content like sound file editing or word processing, where you need to really query the font and know when there's a heading or some other thing in place. It ain't easy yet. And so I think I'm hopeful that because there are significant evolutionary changes every release with VoiceOver on the iOS platform, and that doesn't really happen as much on the Mac, maybe we will get there and that iOS will become a more viable content creation tool for us.
The other thing I think that was interesting, the point that you made in your blog, Jonathan, and I think this is really very important as well, is that with Apple, you just have VoiceOver and nothing else. So if VoiceOver is not doing something that you want it to do, you don't have really any options. On Windows, you have, well, obviously Narrator, which I don't classify personally as a screen reader at the moment, not fully fledged anyway. But you do have JAWS, which is my choice of screen reader. You have NVDA, which is a free screen reader. And you have Window Eyes as well at the moment. So you do have quite a lot of choice. And I have all three of those on my machine. And if you can get yourself into a problem, you can actually get out of it in some respects using another screen reader, and you know that is very helpful and can be. There are certain things that NVDA will do, for instance, that JAWS doesn't do quite as well, and obviously vice versa. So with Apple, it's just VoiceOver and nothing else, and that I think is the problem. If VoiceOver is starting to, in my opinion, deteriorate in certain ways, I just don't think the accessibility is up there. And I certainly don't think Braille is there in it by any means. So if you're just relying on that, that would be my concern as well.
And we should also give a shout out to our friends at Dolphin as well. And of course, they're doing Supernova, yes, and Howl and those things on Windows as well. So yes, you do have a lot of choice there. And I think that's fantastic. If you also take a really good look at Narrator in the Windows 10 anniversary update, it's almost like a completely different product. So Narrator is becoming more and more viable. And again, you see, they have engaged a very capable, connected, talented, blind person to look after Narrator. And so you can tap him on the shoulder, you know who he is. And that's the kind of dialogue that Apple has never been good at, unfortunately. It's just not their culture. I agree with you about Braille. Braille on any Apple platform is not that good. It's sort of passable on iOS, but it's still way too idiosyncratic. And on the Mac, I don't actually think that it's viable for daily use.
No, I would agree with you. I think your blog makes a lot of interesting points, and maybe we will have, you know, the Apple fanboys, as I call them, or the Apple brigade coming on saying, well, actually, you know, I use my Mac for everything. Well, if you do, then that's absolutely fine. And we're not saying that you shouldn't. But like you, Jonathan, I personally do have the same concerns.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I'm a bit of a fanboy, and I think people probably know that, but regular listeners probably figured that out by now. But Equally, though, I think it is so brave of you to come out and talk about this issue, because you will get criticism, Jonathan. You will get people, you will get the fanboys saying, oh, come on, Jonathan, don't be so silly. But actually, you know, what you've talked about is something that's really important to all of us, and that is choice. You're not saying dump your Mac and buy a PC. You're saying there are options out there, and just because the amount of work Apple have put into VoiceOver is good and that is great and all the rest, it doesn't mean it's perfect, and it doesn't mean it should be your only choice.
Yeah, there's a culture. I don't know whether it's just in the blind community or just to do with Apple in general, where if you dare to criticize anything that Apple does, you're viewed as some sort of heretic or something like that. And look, come on, guys. We pay the same money for this stuff as everybody else. We're entitled to the same kind of quality as everybody else. And we're entitled to make the same kind of comments about whether a given product meets our needs as anyone else. And I guess I'm kind of at the stage of my life where I don't really care what people think. I put out a blog post, and if people want to read it and they get something out of it, then fine. And if they don't, then that's fine too. And I'm not at all saying don't buy a Mac. It's not my place to tell you what to buy and what not to buy. My post is merely saying, here's why I made the decision that I made based on the tools that I need. Now, if they were different tools, I could well have made a different choice. For example, if I didn't write a lot of very large books, then, you know, maybe if I was doing exclusively audio work, producing tutorials and just answering a little bit of email and not doing too much of complexity on the web, then maybe the Mac would be fine for me. And it is quite a cool audio production environment, for example, and you've got a number of really great multi-track and post-processing tools. It's brilliant for that. But there are a lot of people who need to write. And look, the thing is, we've got so much of an issue with unemployment in our community that it's important for us to make every possible effort to give ourselves tools where what we produce looks good. And if you turn in a document where maybe you started a heading and you forgot to end it again, or you started bolding something and you forgot to stop bolding it again, and you can't really efficiently proof that and make sure that when you give it to a sighted person, you don't look like somebody who can't see the work and it just looks sloppy, then you're going to suffer the consequences of that. What we're talking about here is actually really serious stuff. And technology is not a religion. If you find something over time has changed and doesn't meet your needs anymore, then flag it. And for me, that's the point that I've reached in terms of the Mac.
I agree completely, absolutely. Couldn't have put it better.
Yeah, I agree. No, do tell us, Jonathan. You've chosen to move away from the Mac and you've bought a Toshiba?
Yeah. You see, I was traveling recently around the United States and I was lugging this 15-inch MacBook Pro around. It's a bit of a large computer, but it is powerful. It's grunty. But one of the things I really missed was that the Mac does not offer an option that has built-in 4G or LTE. Now, the iPad does, and I loved using the iPad Pro when I was traveling because it has an embedded Apple SIM, the particular iPad Pro that I have. So when I landed in the States, I was just able to click into a list of carriers and choose a local carrier, sign up to a plan, and I had data right there on the iPad. It was really slick. Apple hasn't brought that to the Mac yet. So when I was shopping around and thinking, is there something that meets my needs better? One thing that I really did want was this 4G built right into my laptop. I wanted something light and powerful because when you're doing a lot of post-processing on audio, you do get through quite a bit of CPU time. So I ended up with this Toshiba Z30C, which is a magnesium device. When I first touched it, I thought, yeah, this is plasticky and cheap. But it's not plastic. It's actually magnesium, and it's very, very light. And it's got a lot of horsepower, you know, a terabyte of solid-state storage and 16 gigs of RAM and a decent i7 processor. I haven't taken delivery of it yet because they had to build it to my spec. It's not the kind of machine they have on the shelf, but I am looking forward to getting it in my hands and making the change.
Wow. Well, that is one option on the table, certainly. And Jackie, do tell us about your latest purchase.
Well, mine is a similar. I went for the Dell XPS 13, a 13-inch Ultrabook. Very nice machine, lovely keyboard on it. It has an i7 processor, the seventh generation i7 processor with 512 SSD and 16 gig of RAM, and I'm very, very pleased with it. It's running obviously Windows 10. I've done the updates and, you know, installed Office 365, and it's, yeah, I'm really, really pleased with it so far.
Well, there you go. You can't argue with that. But
it looks like a lovely machine, Jackie. I was looking at the XPS 13, and if I could have found it with a 4G option, I might have gone for that too. Mm. It's a really, really nice machine. It's beautifully built. If you don't mind getting into the USB-C world, another one that really impressed me was the HP Spectre. If you do a lot of travel and you really focused on just having the lightest thing possible, the HP Spectre is actually lighter than even the little 12-inch MacBook, and it's beautiful. The design of it is it's a gorgeous thing to hold, and it's kind of something that you would expect Apple to produce, but it's got good battery life. It's really thin and aluminium and gorgeous.
Yeah, the Dell actually has, I think one of the reasons I went for the Dell, well, I had seen one because Stephen had one, so I had seen his at some point earlier in the year, and I thought, oh, this is a really quite a nice lightweight machine. I looked at the Spectre, but I decided against it because of the C ports and stuff, and I just sort of thought, no, I think I'll just stick with the Dell because it has a nice little adapter which I bought with it, which would allow me to plug the adapter in, and it gives me Ethernet if I want it. It gives me HDMI, it gives me VGA if I want to, and another USB 3. So I'm really chuffed with it, and I hope you'll be very happy and as productive with your Toshiba portage.
Well, it's nice to have a laptop that has the ports that I actually need. So I've got three USB, sort of traditional USB ports, as well as the 4G, an old VGA port and an SD card slot. And it's just really good. And yet, it's a lovely thin thing. I have to say that I think we have Apple to thank for a lot of this stuff because, Windows laptops used to be so ugly, and then Apple came along with the MacBook Air, which I think really did change everything, and it caused people to lift their game because aesthetics do count, and suddenly people were willing to abandon Windows for the Mac and take that hit with the learning curve because it was such a beautiful piece of hardware, and the rest of the industry has had to respond accordingly.
And interesting, and also interestingly, you know, with a lot of Ultrabooks now being generally smaller, if you can't see the screen at all, you actually can buy a far more powerful machine in a much smaller case. You know, you can buy in a 12-inch or a 13-inch. I mean, the Dell XPS that Jackie has, and I had one, was, I think it was in an 11.6-inch casing, but it was actually, I don't know how this works, but it was like a 13-inch screen, but it wasn't in that size of, because they'd taken the bezel away. So there was no bezel at all, just screen and keyboard. So it made it much smaller. Again, that is really important for us. Portability is important. We're generally walking around places. We don't want to be carrying or lugging around, as you say, that 15-inch MacBook anymore.
Yes, that's certainly the point that I got to. I only got my 15-inch MacBook because it was the only way that I could get the faster processor. So I sort of resented having that extra bit of screen real estate that I didn't need. And I'll tell you what, you take that 15-inch MacBook Pro with you for a while when you're getting in and out of American airports where the security can be quite stressful, and you start to kind of feel differently about it. So I'm really looking forward to this tiny light machine that has just as much power, longer battery life. And that's important to me too. You know, sometimes when I'm on sometimes the flights that I have to take here down under are 12 and a bit hours long. And so being able to have a lightweight machine that I can put on the tray table and work without having to worry about whether I'm going to run out of juice and stuff, that's a significant thing.
I guess for you, when you heard about the touch bar coming onto the new MacBooks, you thought, was that it for you? Was that the point when you said, I've had enough, this doesn't appeal to me?
It was a red flag for sure. I don't mind the touch bar, and I can certainly see that when you're a sighted person and you're not really into keyboard shortcuts, if you can sort of see a little strip above the screen and you're writing an email and it suddenly says send and you just tap that thing for send, it's absolutely brilliant. Some people think it's a bit of a gimmick, and maybe it is. I think it has the potential to be quite a significant productivity hit for a blind person if the keyboard shortcuts go away over time. You can get used to, with muscle memory, finding where the send button always appears on your touch bar and double tapping it. I got no difficulty with that, but it's still never going to be as completely foolproof as hitting, say, Command-Shift-D to send your email. And if over time those keyboard shortcuts start to disappear because of a dumbing down of the Mac platform, and I think that's possible with new versions, certainly of third-party apps, then Houston, we do have a problem. We also have a big problem, I think, in terms of efficiently using Windows. So I could have got a new MacBook and then connected some external keyboard that had the physical function keys there, because a lot of the Windows apps I use, not just Jaws as my screen reader, but the broadcasting software I use and sound editors I use, they all work with physical function keys. And I think this is one thing you may find over time as well with the touch bar, that a lot of sound editors on the Mac may start to use the touch bar for scrubbing and editing functions. And that may or may not cause blind people to have a bit of a productivity hit. So I guess the touch bar didn't really trouble me in the same way that the headphone jack on the iPhone did, because that was just a detrimental game changer for me. But it just made me think, maybe this isn't the platform that I want to go forward with.
I think, Jonathan, as well, if I make the point of cost, I mean, you and I, in fairness, have bought fairly high-end machines, I suppose some people would describe them as. I think you get an awful lot more money as well, if that is a consideration for a person buying a machine. I think you get an awful lot more for your money with the Windows machines that we've purchased and similar specs to what you would if you were going to go for a high-end Mac.
It's a very important point. I mean, you can get a really decent laptop for, you know, a few hundred quid in the UK and get a great functioning machine. Now, people have said to me, yeah, but you see, then you've got to buy a third-party screen reader if you want a business quality screen reader. You've got to go out and you've got to buy it. You've got to maintain it with the SMAs. The thing is, it's all a moot point if you can't actually be productive with what you buy. And I just found, again, coming back and maybe getting a bit repetitive, that when it comes to certain sorts of tasks, I could not be productive with the Mac on my own. So then you get into the dilemma of, okay, I have to buy this more expensive Mac to use the few features on macOS that I do want to use, plus I've got to buy the virtual machine software and maybe a copy of Windows on top of that. And then I still have to buy my third-party screen reader to get done the stuff that I really want to get done efficiently. So I don't accept anymore the economies of scale for people who want to be productive in certain endeavors of business.
Well, saying goodbye to the Mac is a latest blog from Jonathan Mosen. Jonathan, where can we find it?
You can go to my website at Mosen, that's MOSEN.org, and you can choose the blog link, and there's a bit of a conversation that takes place in the comments. Although, you know, it's like the old story of the Emperor's New Clothes. When I published this blog post, I figuratively put my flame-proof suit on, and I thought, okay, I really think this needs to be said, but it's not going to be pretty. You know, I've had so many people on the blog, on Twitter, on email, contact me and said, thank you. You know, the fact that somebody has said this, it just makes me feel like I'm not alone, because I've been feeling this way. So I nearly didn't publish it. I nearly wrote it as an exercise for me. I find if I get my thoughts on paper, you know, then it helps me clarify my own decision-making process. Mm-hmm. But I did publish it, and I'm so glad I did, because probably about 90% of the responses I've received have been overwhelmingly positive, even from diehard Mac users who say, you know, you're really making some important points that Apple needs to hear.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed. Completely.
Well, it's important to raise these issues, and it's good that you're doing it in this way. Jonathan, always good to speak to you on Tech Talk. Thank you.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.